de mais potência e a gente precisa de obedecer. So what we are going to do now is can see we make the Quran, we've got a member, we've got six members, the Quran is five, so we will need the role of the Quran. So I'm going to call the members to nominate a name, but a member before nominating the name will have to, for a copy process, introduce him or herself, and same as the member who's going to serve on that particular name. And then the independent member will take the action. I thank you, over to you.
Thank you, Committee Secretary. My name is Tiffany Motara. I hereby nominate Honorable Charles Dipier to chair.
The name of Honorable Dipier has been nominated by Honorable Motara. Any other one? Honorable Nzimane?
Yep, my name is Louis Nzimane, representing the province of KwaZulu-Natal, seconding the nomination.
Okay, the name of Mr. Didier has been submitted by Mr. Nzimane. I would like to check if there is any member who would like to second. I'm going to nominate another second name.
I'd like to propose, my name is Farah Isaac. I'd like to propose Honorable Gaylor.
Honorable Isaac is proposing Honorable Gaylor. Is it any second?
Yes, I should.
The name of Honorable Gaylor has been recommended by a member. Okay, since one of the members who have got two names, we'll have to, Honorable Gaylor. I support the name of Wimbo Jampier. Thank you. So I'm turning down. Okay. Now that Honorable members, Honorable Kayla has supported the name of Honorable Jampier, I'm not going to wait any time because the next stage was to check if the members adopted the nomination, both of them, and go to a vote. So that is now and there's time. So Honorable Jampier, do you accept the nomination as the acting chairman of the session? Honorable Dibier, I accept the nomination. Okay, thank you very much, Honorable members. Honorable Dibier, I would like to hand over the meeting to you. You may take the chair and share the meeting.
Good morning, honorable members. This is part of democracy. Yes, democracy in action. Good morning to everyone present. Let's have a very fruitful meeting, very important meeting. Listening to stakeholders, listening to the public, listening to their views on the Division of Revenue Bill that is in front of this committee in the National Council of Provinces. During this week and previous weeks, we had a briefing in the provincial legislators by members of this committee. Briefing our members there, Standing Committee on Finance, on the Division of Revenue Bill, being very well assisted by the National Treasury. Thank you for that. We are keen to make that message to the headquarters, Victoria HQ, and the Northern Cape. Public hearing on this Division of Revenue will be Monday, on Thursday in the legislature. Secretary, are there any apologies?
Thank you, Sir President. I would like to also indicate that I received a letter from the Office of the Chairperson advising myself that Honorable Mo Chachopeng will not be able to attend this meeting because he is pressing the province of the Northwest. So those are the two apologies, Chairperson. For the record, it's Mr. Mohai and Mr. Mo Chachopeng. Thank you so much.
Thank you very well. Honorable Mohai presenting us as a collective at a very important meeting in Washington, also coinciding with IMF meeting, where the Minister of Finance will be present. Thank you, honorable members, for that. The objective, as we stated many a times, is good governance, sound financial management and accountability. We need a public ethic that values honesty and fairness. We are accountable to the people of this country how the taxes are being spent. If we look at the budget as presented by the Honourable Minister of Finance, the projected economic growth is less than 1%. There will be fiscal pressures requiring to lower than expected revenue collection, although SARS made an announcement that they may put through the 1 trillion rand for revenue collection a week or two ago. We've got inflation pressures on the cost of goods and services. The minister came up with what to do to narrow the budget deficit, lowering expenditure ceilings, 10 billion rand and 50 billion rand in the two healthy years. Looking at the division of revenue short, the dividing division of 1.3 trillion rand, 855.1 billion to national departments, to provincial governments, 410.7 billion, and to local governments, 52.6 billion. The equitable share is 14.9 billion rand lower than the 2015 NDVBS, as was projected then. There are also major changes to the provincial conditional grant framework. So that's in short summary of what we see in the division of revenue. And welcome to SOGA, welcome to the SFC, welcome to Kusatu, familiar face, Matthew, welcome again. And we received a submission from Mrs. Kamalu. I wish there were more such presentations or submissions from the public, because then they have also their view being adopted in the public hearing. We're going straight to the first submission by SOGA. Are you ready? Ready? Honourable members, do you have the documentation? Right, as you can follow, make your notes. We're going to take the presentation and then we will zoom into the questions. I'm going to give you 30 minutes for your presentation. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, Honourable members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, we are a delegation from SOGA. I am Councillor Joe Munyo, the SOGA rep to the Finance and Appropriations Civil Committees, together with Mr. Simpiwe Tengwa, the Executive Director of the Ministry of Finances at SOGA, as well as Mr. James Masia of Inoport from Victoria. So, Chair, without wasting time, So, they will then present the submissions. I thank you, sir. Thank you.
SOGA plays an important role in the consultation process on the division of revenue. Be part of the Budget Council, where they make the inputs as full members.
Please proceed.
Our views on the division of revenue bill, we do trust as always that this committee will note some of the issues that we want to highlight and find a way of interacting with us and other stakeholders in terms of how to resolve some of the matters that have not been resolved yet. The presentation covering overview of what this budget we're talking about is about are the changes in the current bill, some of the challenges and opportunities, the constant grant reform, and other matters broadly that we wish to reflect so we can comment upon, and then we'll conclude. The bill presented by the Minister on the 25th February was presented against a backdrop of a challenging macroeconomic framework, as the Chair has already indicated. The fiscal pressures being experience do affect all of us, but more specifically the CEO of local government. Beyond the immediate situation that both in the immediate and medium term, the implications of this state of our finances need a better way of understanding and more instruments to address those challenges. The need for balancing competing priorities and interests is very important and important at this point, while we need to ensure that the basic needs of our people are met through the better management of resources by all the QCM. As you would know already, members, that we had a two-budget forum in the previous year, one in June, focusing on dealing with local government issues specifically, and the last one in September, that talked to the figure that was then presented by the minister in October last year in the medium-term budget policy statement. Subsequently, we had a special budget forum that was convened in January that had to deal with some of the changes that are proposed by salary to the allocation previously indicated in the medium-term budget policy statement. As far as we have been working with Treasury, FFC, COFDA, and other at the technical level to compare notes and canvas views amongst ourselves at the technical level before these were agreed upon at the technical level by our principal. Up front, we do want to indicate that there's some progress on some of the matters that we reported on previously, such as the constitutional grant review, the costing of basket services, the work on the division of fiscal power and functions, and a couple of other areas. And those, we do hope, would be reflected in the next budget as we implement some of the recommendations. As indicated already, that the speech by the minister on the budget and division of revenue bill painted a picture of a decreasing GDP growth because of a number of factors. And the next period would in all likelihood see some of these still needing to be attended to. Pressures are rising from the power in the financing, tertiary education, funding issues, the national health initiative, and the number of other national government initiatives. And this will have great applications for increased accountability for all CMs as we commit about the resources so that those who better manage what is allocated to them are better often funded accordingly. We think about great allocation. The appeal to the local government here in the deal has declined from what was initially presented by the minister in October last year. And these concerns are likely to happen over the medium term expenditure framework. In line and consistently with the reduction in government GDP projections. For example, the medium term policy statement indicated allocations of 2 billion in 2017-18, 4 billion in 2018-19, and none of those are reductions, you know, that were likely to encounter 2 billion first year, 4 billion next year, and so on. And that also includes the reductions within the company equitable share, which are about 300 million in 2030, 500 million next year, and about 1 billion in the outer year. And those amount of those calculations are 0.6, 1% and 1.8% decline in the equitable share during the medium term framework. And these are cut and dry, depending again on the performance of the economy, there could be still further reductions in these allocations as Treasury has indicated. It is in this context, Chair and Honourable Members, that SALGA has made an input raising a need and necessity for the protection of poor and smaller municipalities. That is, this reduction, much as they are understood, must not have a net effect of crippling and paralyzing small municipalities, especially those in rural areas. This reduction, however, those things here, you know, rule for army is probably a better response in terms of what has been taken and allocated overall. And that both, you know, allocation will still continue growing over the medium term, though not at initially projected, you know, amount. We do note, as well as the fact that the allocation, the recovery plan, has not been reduced by more than 5% across the board. And we do know that within the equitable share formula, we have agreed on building in place mechanisms that still guarantee institutional and community services components of the equitable share allocation. SALGA, in partnership with the RFC, which is here today, fortunately, we could have had a joint stand on the adequacy of the allocation of various components within the equitable share. We call that the next point that I want to talk to the chair is on the grant for review. I'll come back to the point that I was making of starting with the FC. We did present last time to this committee the fact that we were conducting a conditional grant for review. And that study presented a number of options that need to be looked at and considered, you know, moving forward. And we made a number of proposals on the measure of water sanitation grants, on creating a window within the grant framework for asset management and for the thing renovations. We look at how some projects could be selected differently and made a number of other, you know, proposals around the housing development grant and the capacity grant relating to human settlements. We note that in the Division of Revenue Bill, one of the important grants for local government is blind, chronically. The Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, MSIG, has declined from 251 million initially projected to just about 84 million. And that's a huge issue for us, but that grant is relied by municipalities for a number of initiatives that we think are still important to continue with. The MFIG provided for support mechanisms for implementation of municipal standard charge of account. In the current Division of Revenue Bill, there's no provision made for that, and we see as well that it could have a serious limiting impact because MSCOR is supposed to be coming into effect on the 1st of July next year. And without adequate support financially and otherwise, most municipalities could be found wanting in terms of readiness to implement MSCOR for the cost. On the positive side, the Division of Revenue Bill members provide for the emergency support plan, which is the 297 million. So we note and upstream that as well because the amount of municipalities do need to be supported. We do, however, feel that that amount is not sufficient. Our initial projection, and I've said to some pilot in case then, is that each municipality would need not less than 100 million for our organizing system, policies, structures, and everything. But with that amount currently provided, in the Division of Revenue Bill, each municipality will end up getting only just about 17.5 million. And we fear that amount may not be adequate. We have great gifts and concise resolution and selected that will support to happen with them. We've noted as well that as happened in 2011, there's an amount of about 309 million that has been provided in the Division of Revenue Bill as a one-off gratuity to all councillors that won't be attending to the Philippines. SALGA has been working with Treasurer and Doctor to devise a formula for the allocation of that amount on a program basis to all councillors that won't come there. We do note as well that there is work if I'm love for you and burden for you by Kota on the allocation of fiscal power and function. We do feel strongly about this covenant change because it is only upon the finalization of that document that we can concretely deal with the issue of underfunded and unfunded money. So we see a particular interest on the well-being of my Kota and we need our input as we interact with them on the various stuff. We look at the cost contingent measures that were raised by the minister in the budget speech. We've noted a well-circular circulated by Treasury on the matter. We made a call as well as and we have said to all the bodies, having them to support that initiative. We did bring the technology with Treasury that some of these items have no legal bearing on the municipality unless each municipality adopts, you know, incorporating many measures, you know, so that it is accompanied or enforced by a custom resolution. And we call upon all municipalities to do that and adopt those incorporating many measures as they adopt their budget for the financial year. We will again make this call and reinforce it at our national level of affairs, which is happening on the 18th to the 20th of May in Port Elizabeth. I'm sure that the committee would be invited and much welcome to participate in us in the session. On forward looking, let us share if you allow me and towards conclusion. We have been particularly concerned as progress with the revenue generation and collection against policies. Currently, local government is owed about just over 118 billion by the 3 years of government, by communities and households, by private businesses and other entities. We do feel strongly that we do need to focus and resolve some of these issues. Because people are bearing on the credit rating of municipalities, on the risk profile of municipalities, but also some of this huge debt is just unserviceable. And the fact that our community is grappling with innovative solutions, you know, to prioritize them. Because that's the one perpetually and forever. We are raising an issue again about the fact that we have not had an eye to eye with Treasury on the farm deal reform, the revenue generation instrument that they have created proposed, such as the local business tax and the testing of road infrastructure and getting license increase. Those are the cars that were discussing and were hoping that sooner or later would form one another. And they would guide local government accordingly. We are quite advanced in considering a number of other financing instruments, such as the bond market, the food financing instrument, and others. And we're hoping that during this financial year, we will highlight some of these instruments in housing, but also encourage other metros and other bigger municipalities to take up the challenge and see if these instruments could be utilized in their places. We have made a proposal around the creation of a legal instrument, and we may need the committee to help us in where the equipment set could be used, you know, to leverage, you know, accessing capital market and borrowing within aluminium and quality. The issue of a national collection agency has been in the public space for some time. It arises from the resolution that Tonga had taken in 2011 at this conference. That the current revenue collection setup is not an optimal one. We are looking at various models from other countries. We've done a study, you know, in the last financial year around the number of businesses in the interventions that are necessary. And we've been in engagement with the South African Revenue Service itself on whether they can provide us with information that would enable local government either to set up its own agents or to work field to us, you know, in ensuring optimal collection of what is due to municipalities. Without a comprehensive database, such as the one in other entities have, municipalities are finding themselves challenged in being able to provide their clients and therefore billing them accordingly. As it is possible for
one tells them to be indigent in another municipality, but not indigent in another municipality, and being able to pay his taxes and rates and everything, you know, to some, but not being able to pay, you know, the municipality. We want to have that interaction with the municipality and see if, you know, there are some solutions that can be identified on this matter. Discussions are at an advanced stage, and we're hoping that the Salda, you know, will bring on board trend and culture in the policy of we can get to this once and for all. The last issue, Chair, that I want to flag is the one that we raised with the community at this last workshop. The whole issue between municipalities and ESCOM and NASA around the service provider agreement, around the law of ESCOM practices, around the inability of a couple of municipalities in order to pay, you know, their account to ESCOM and water board. But also, we've been saying it to the panel. We are urging our municipalities, and we've met all of them around the country and the provincial federal, to ask them to set their bill. But we are equally saying that ESCOM and the water board must consider the practices, you know, in particular ESCOM, so that municipalities are not billed, you know, what is not sustainable and what, you know, is unnecessary. In conclusion, we know to what you're engaging the division of revenue bill, and we do understand the circumstances under which it was sealed by the minister. We do add, though, that the committee should assist work that in monitoring, you know, what is given to local government, but also not just that, but the local government spend, because again, speaking more of the process, but being unable to spend those resources is equally a problem. That is how the, you know, the solutions that we seek to deal with some of the issues do need to be supported, and if need be, be piloted to the legislative process, where from the local. We start the only couple of basic services that we have worked on and developed between ourselves and the FLC. We need to take that discussion forward, prevent it to change, and ensure that the next around of calculation and determining of the equation does back the issue that are raised therein. And some of these items that we've raised will continue engaging treasurers and other stakeholders on and hope to find collective solutions. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, questions. We will take the questions after all the presentations. Thank you for being in your time frame. Also, there's a couple of important matters raised by Shaka. We will be looking forward to the invitation for your conference in Port Elizabeth, 18th to 20 May 2016. The other one is concerned about the revenue collection by municipalities. And we said it many a time in this committee that municipalities must learn from best practice. Secondly, the matter raised around ESCOM. This committee called National Treasury, I think twice, to come and report on the withholding of the equitable share. Mr. Jan Hutton was here and he was leading a team, so that this committee continue with that meetings, early meetings. But looking at ESCOM, maybe contemplate calling it to beautify. Let me start sorting this thing out. The Parliament is the SOP give direction, not only to not criticize, but to assess it. Calling the stakeholders that we get to be forward. Sorry for that, I seem to know. Yeah. Fine. Thank you to Helga Sharton. Where are you? Here is a familiar face. This is how we think. So welcome to Sharton. Yeah. I went through the Sharton presentation. Ready, my attention. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Good morning to members and colleagues. And thanks for giving us a slot. I'll try to copy Paul's example of Kiri Shorten Street. My apologies, the accommodations we have raised are familiar to members. But of course, matters overlapping the regular variety of issues. My name is Matthew, my surname is Fox, I'm from Consulting Parliamentary Office. I think Honourable Chair, members, colleagues, if members have an issue to Nation Consult, we're always available on any issue under the sun. Even members who are not from the AMC were always available to advance to the workers.
Thank you.
I want to convince all members to support our position. But yeah, I think also one issue we have around the budget is that our whole budget process, we have that network where consultants and other unions and business and so on. We have two occasions a year with the Minister of Finance, but it's not really a substantive occasion. The Minister comes, gives his input, we respond, then we have lunch and we sit there for 6 months. So I think as part of assisting each other, part of assisting government, we'll really find ways of, even long before the existing budget is adopted, ways of trying to engage them and trying to find each other, as opposed to just trying to box each other politically all the time. So the government of Commerce Chair that last year's budget, Minister of Finance, their commander, had proposed a UNF contribution holiday for the year. And we were quite surprised that Labour to find out this thing an hour before the budget speech, because it affects workers directly. But really, the point I make is that if we had spent time engaging 6 months before, I suspect we would have easily found each other as consultant with the government and so on. But having said that, Chair, I think I'll just jump in for positional input. I think, Chair, look, we're very sensitive to government pressure. The government doesn't have a magic wand. It's really under very, very difficult constraints. So revenue collection, in terms of essentially jobless growth for a long time, global pressure, the whole shopping list of issues. I think we're sympathetic to that. I think, Comrade Chair, that we do feel that Comrade Gordon did the best job that he could in the circumstances. Our one concern, Comrade Chair, is that for us, the fundamental political problem facing the country is the 33% unemployment, which is a long-term challenge. And we're not sure how this budget will bring something new to the table to meaningfully break unemployment back. I think for us, that's one of the major fundamental problems. I think, Chair, we do appreciate that this is not an austerity budget. I think government has still put efforts to stimulate the economy. We appreciate that social grants were large, not cut as much as we feared they would be cut. And of course, we appreciate that infrastructure expenditure is still significantly supportive. I think, Comrade Chair, that we're still concerned that government is kind of adopting a very conservative approach, similar to the EU, of trying to cut costs and all that, or reduce expenditure rather. We're still convinced more by the United States and China's approach where they've stimulated the economy actively, and we've seen the results of that. So we've seen that the U.S. during Obama's 7 years in office, unemployment has fallen from 11% to 5%. And for us, Chair, look, workers have been in a crisis long beyond the December crisis of last year. We've been in a crisis for 40 years when they've seen 1 out of 3 workers being unemployed. And for us, it's not a sustainable position. Comrade Chair, in terms of the much to do with the Labour Public Service wage bill, I think, Comrade Chair, our frustration that no one is mentioning that government has suffered over the last 22 years to reduce their hourly wage within the public service. It has made good progress in that regard. To the extent that you find that wage gap is about 1 to 13 in the public service. But in the private sector, it's about 1 to 10. I think, Comrade Chair, also missing from the debate on public service vacancies that we're talking about police officers, nurses, teachers, doctors, street cleaners. Actually, those are essential services. I think also the missing that no one really pays attention. In fact, the public service headcount in the last 2 years has been reduced by about 20,000. But we do appreciate government's desperate position. And I think for us, the correct position is for government departments not to just come with managerial decisions, but engage in the public service bargaining council with the respective unions. What part can be frozen, what part cannot be frozen, and so on. I think, Comrade Chair, we do sympathize with government's frustration on the state-owned enterprises. First approach is to look at how can emergency, and how can we cut costs and so on, but not going down the route of privatization. So, for example, Comrade Chair, we would support government's position that just have one public airline. Currently, we've got about 4, basically. SAA, Mango, Air Link, and Express. And of course, the make no sense, they have 4 boards, etc. So, we would support merging on that kind of an example. But there's not been a cost of jobs. I think, yeah, we'll get into the rest of it in a second, but I think for us that's a major issue. I think we must commend government, though, for keeping public finances under control. And we know that there's this bigger monster called the rating agencies. and it's a very difficult situation for government. I think last year we should share that we're still not convinced that the NDP's economic clauses are sufficient to get us out of this perennial long-term unemployment crisis. We do appreciate government's additional revenues this year. We were quite supporting last year with the increased income tax, but we have noted that government is a bit more subtle this year, increasing the income tax through a lower tax budget increase, so to speak. Chair, I think our one concern about revenues is that the municipalities, Eskom, your water tariff, are far above inflation levels. I think you say in Cape Town, you see that your water bill has gone up by about 50% this year. Other municipalities seem to view the tariffs as a way to plug holes, and whether or not the public can afford it is neither here nor there. I think over here we're also deeply worried that we appreciate government not increasing VAT this year, despite the noise of last year. But here for us, the VAT increase is going to hit on the poor and the hardest who cannot afford it, and also with the depressing effect on the economy. Chair, I think there's a variety of tax proposals I think government will look at to increase revenue. And that could be increase in luxury goods taxes, wealth tax, but also government could be creative to look at taxes to incentivize local procurement, incentivize beneficiation, and so on. Chair, in terms of UAF, why I want to mention is that often we've seen our good bodies in Treasury complain about the surplus of the UAF fund and say, look, it must be pooled with the general fiscal budget. For us, that's a no-go area because that is a solidarity tax by workers to assist unemployed. It can't be mixed with everything else under the sun. And the reason why there's a surplus is that the conditions for accessing UAF previously were reduced. So previously, if you resign from work because your husband had to move to Johannesburg and you had to move with your husband, and that was taken away in the criteria for getting access to the UAF. But on a positive note, Comrade Chair, we had good engagement with government. There's a very progressive UAF bill currently in the National Council of Provinces, which is going to significantly expand access to the UAF to take care of more expenses, maternity leave, defend benefits across the board in a very progressive way. So I think that helped to reduce the surplus there. And we'll be more engaged with government shortly. I think, Chair, in terms of employment tax incentives, this is the third year of it, and this is the final year. Our frustration there, Comrade Chair, is that government can't say on the 230,000 claims the youth wage subsidy is commonly known, are those new jobs or are those slave jobs because tax confidentiality laws. And what we've seen is that the majority of the claimants have been labour brokers, which adds to our frustration that we're now subsidizing this tax and money, what we commonly call a decent labour, very precarious labour under horrendous conditions. I think, Comrade Chair, we've seen the Panama discussion and welcome Minister Gordon's commitment to investigate those persons who are robbing the fiscus. I really would wish government would take this as a matter of highest urgency. And I think Chair Joseph Saku, just to be quick, we know that we suffered as a majority of the budget of Swaziland, and really, within the 21st century, Swaziland was considered a party as being a democratic state in the Swatic region. We think government can use this pressure to give our good king Swati to foreign lands, without being too much of an imperialist on the chair. I won't mention what the National Union of Mine Workers has said about the Suji Kai Rector for last year. Okay, that's off the record, Chair. Chair, look, I think some of you have expenditure, I mentioned them already. I think we're generally pleased with how government tried to keep the balance right. There was some concern that we saw many increases in the policy department and some less in the service delivery department. I think the other issues I've already mentioned to be kind of the checks. I think we welcome government's efforts, good efforts to reduce the thing expenditure, wasteful expenditure. There is also some departments which are quite worrying about the amount of money spending consultants. Government has done good work around the chief procurement officer. We look forward to him doing more work around textbooks for school curriculum and corruption. I must take over chair, it's a worrying thing, there was articles here that there has not been a single successful prosecution under the Prevention of Corruption Act over the last 10 years. And I think given the figures that AG gives us around wasteful expenditure and corruption, that's quite a shocking information. Commissioner, in January 8th last year, the President committed government to ending outsourcing in the public service. Yet we've not seen that happening in a significant way. You can even come here to Parliament and still find outsourcing growing and freely as officials giving self-contracts through outsourcing. Commissioner, in terms of specific departments and so on, the President mentioned the issue of having one capital city, within Parliament. Chair, we're not going to have the correct approach to intend to take costs. For example, by when departments come to Parliament, they can just send two officials as opposed to a delegation of 12.
There's only which committee one can use. You can reduce the amount of international trips and so on. But if you're worried about what is the political message you'll send to the Reconciliation Nation Group, what is the message you'll send, for example, to the Western Cape Committee Chair? In terms of public work, it's not as good standards here. We appreciate government's aspiration to create jobs. We support an initiative on public work programs targeting people who are very low skilled, have not been able to find work for a very long time. But we worry that many municipalities, because of the budget crunch they face, as Songa has mentioned, this has now become a way to balance the budget. So if I wish to be normal, permanent, decent, municipal jobs, a pension with a medical aid or surgery check, is now being given to grandmothers and aunties for 67 rand a day. You find even in the world of municipalities that are capable, street cleaning means that I expand a public work program. And these are my new permanent jobs. Chair, having said that, I think we'll support Sangha's call for a review of the funding model for municipalities, especially the rural ones which lack a sufficient tax base. Again, Chair, I think we'll launch a conscious question. We still need the district council for such financial pressure. We do support government efforts to merge about 21 municipalities this year. And I think we're quite concerned about the significant increase in allocation for traditional leaders in this day and age. Chair, just home affairs. We've not seen a significant budget allocation for the planned water management agency. And I think, Chair, there was a debate about 5 years ago about building a national local provincial election as a cost-saving measure. I know there's a political consequence to doing that, but I think it might still be something to consider given the pressures on government. Chair, DERCO is not really a focus on entity debate, but we think there's more work DERCO could have to be promoting trade, especially for exporters. I think we mentioned the good work actually is done around a lot of issues. But I think, Chair, if we're facing such huge fiscal constraints, we're concerned about the massive amount of money being given to the development bank. And is that really the best way to spend our money? Chair, I think in terms of the significant budget policy, budget policy department, we're a bit concerned about the Department of Policy and Monitoring Evaluation and DPSA being significant budget increases, what about inflation levels, as well as about the amount of money they've spent on consultants. Public enterprises, from the chair. I think for us, the main concern here is that government has correctly committed itself not to retrenching. Yet you've got SAA, Telcom, the Post and Eskom frequently retrenching workers. SAA last year was pushing to retrench all the 800 workers. We've seen Telcom has reduced the staff complement from 26,000 to 13,000, and they've now committed to, by July this year, to cutting it again by another 6,000. And this is in an era of a bloodbath across the economy in terms of jobs. I'm not sure why the government is allowing better things to do this, but we're hoping that government will finally bring the shareholder measure bill this year as a way of empowering government to begin. Chair, just in terms of expenditure items, we were quite shocked at that SAA has spent almost $1 million on new head office. We also saw the figure from Women's Parliament to identifying in East Rand with a figure of about 7 million rand. And again, I'm not sure if it's really the best way to spend money, Commissioner. In terms of the Department of Women's Affairs, Commissioner, again, the amount of money spent by the Department of International Trips is quite worrying, and you see the department. Basic education, and I think once again, is to raise the question, will this funding be the year that we end month schools? Will we finally take all textbooks in the little time to all schools? And will government be able to provide transport to rural scholars across the board? So I think that the stats are quite worrying, especially in areas like the Eastern Cape. I think we must commend government on the good work it does around higher education. We've seen an NSFAS funding increase from about 3 billion in 2009 to about 10 billion this year. Of course, it's not efficient, but it's a good effort. I think, Chair, what is said here is that the threshold to qualify for NSFAS is too low. It's about 122,000, which means if the wife and the husband are working as a cleaner and as a driver, you won't qualify. The nurse won't qualify for NSFAS. So you're leaving us working for classes. So you're leaving out a huge chunk of working class and middle class families. And if your fees for UCT, Stellenbosch, etc., 50,000 rand, chapel tuition, were basically making education public universities unaffordable. We know that this effort was mentioned about the Minister's funds, the surplus funds in the PTAM, and whilst we symbolize shifting some of the money from there, we've also addressed the capacity constraints of the CETA because those are meant to address specific skill shortage in your industries, not industrial workers. Committee, I think we support government efforts to roll the NHIs as soon as the better, but that doesn't mean we don't need to jack up public health facilities, which are a shocking situation, as well as the role of community health workers. We must commend government for the good work done on social grants that really is a lifesaver for majority citizens. We appreciate Corinne Gordon's commitment to releasing the long-awaited plan reform discussion paper by the end of June. We appreciate government building new substance abuse clinics. Again, given the level of drug abuse, we need to have much more than set out. Correction level of this committee has wanted to just amend. Even the target to reduce overcrowding is 34%. It's a shocking target to be working towards. And I think we really want to see that inmates actually make it work to develop skills. Committee, in terms of military vision, I think that's the main issue there, is that the increase in allocated arms force is really a priority. And in terms of presidential plane, we don't want to see a deputy president stuck in Kruger Park or Burundi or other places. But I'm not sure spending 4 billion rand in last year's quote, which in itself I think was based upon a 2008 quote, and that was before the collapse of the rand, can really be a priority in the same age. Not that we're saying that president or the deputy president must walk, but SAA is there. Obviously, one concern about our that we have on the streets and the vacancies is on paving backlogs, which is quite high in the Department of Justice. We appreciate how this commitment not to free vacancies in police. But I think, Commissioner, we must be worried about, I think, about 4,500 police officers dedicated to the Deputy Protection Unit. We don't want to see our politicians be molested by criminals, but I'm not sure the amount of resources being shifted to the Protection Unit is really justifiable. And there surely could be a little bit more modesty there. And those officers who are very well skilled can be deployed to places like Iyanga, which are playing, which are really suffering from high levels of crime. I've never been to Kai, but to the community. I think, Commissioner, our concern about agriculture and forestry is why the department is separated from rural development. I think we've reached a fragmentation department over the last this administration. And it really creates a lot of duplication and a lot of kind of silos and cost purposes amongst departments. We can do some good work done, but we worry that not just support the community of emerging farmers, we need to shift more to veterinary schools, to agricultural colleges. Currently we only have one veterinary school in the entire country. Into the rural development, we're not convinced that the budget allocated is sufficient to address about 330,000 land claimants, as well as to ensure land equity to farm workers. I think our chair, DTI is one department which really has done fantastic work. We want to see more shifted towards it, especially for the programs on motor manufacturing, supporting the textile industry, where we actually sold 2,000 jobs created last year. Agriculture and tourism. I think, Commissioner, we can also see more work for supporting given to DTI to promote exports. We are a little bit concerned about back and tourism, but we share this really the most important priority for government. Economic Development Commissioner has done good work, and we think more can be done in that area. But again, it's a question of shifting more money to that department. Commissioner, I think in the energy, we must commend government for turning the corner around the electricity crisis. But again, we're still waiting about the unofficial electricity cut to the heavy industry and the impact of setup upon economic growth. Government has done excellent work around renewable energy, which has created lots of jobs, especially in your province, the Northern Cape, which is fantastic. I think more can be done there for my chair. Our work sort of energy chair is that we feel nuclear energy is completely unnecessary. Unaffordable. The stats we've seen range from 400 billion to 3 trillion rand, depending upon how much is required. But given the level of technology available for renewable energy, we just feel it's not necessary for my chair. We're hoping government will just let that thing not lie. And of course, it's successful for corruption internationally. From which I have other concerns around electricity is around the exorbitant tariff that Eskom is releasing on the public, far and above inflation every single year, as well as the waste that we see in Eskom. I think, from which I also worry about municipalities, who also seem to often view tariffs for electricity as a way to balance the budget, regardless of how the public wants to afford it. From which I think we support the good work environmental and industry, and again, we want to see more resources and shift to it. In terms of the Department of Labour, again, the department is heavily under-resourced. There are very few inspectors to cover a very large task. The work they've done under our top agents, charity needs to do more effort to place them. Commit chair, we're not here as consultants just to complain to state governments, but we also trying to play our role in terms of stimulating the economy. We participate in two teams in NASDAQ, one making minimum wage, which we hope to contribute this year, and one looking how can we increase stability in the labor market to avoid letting new strikes and labor strikes and so on in a win-win way. And I think the Deputy President has been quite a pillar of support for those engagements. Commissioner, to the mineral resources, we're coming to the end of the group. We're considering replacing our mining blast this year, about 36,000 jobs are going to be lost, and we don't see much action by the department in that regard. Commissioner, I think I mentioned issues around telecommunications, but again, the post office is a major point of concern, but we're hoping the new CEO will bring some sanity to it. And I think Chair Kordok is in the hearing around outsourcing, labor working, and funding. Tourism Committee Chair, I think, has been a success for governments, and again, more effective even there. And I'm hoping the blunders of last year and all the visa regulations have been learnt. Committee Chair, transport, we appreciate the massive amount of money government is putting into transport. That's the right way to go, but of course, I think all members would be shocked by what has emerged in class last year on the wrong specifications of railways being formed and so on. So we're having some good news around our capacity to export rails to Botswana, I think to Swaziland is also good news. I think I'm sure we would want to plead that we accept that ETOL has failed, and we bury that. I think the revenue collection of the ETOL is something like 10% or 20%. I'm going to share with you, going to take from what I've learned from, let's have a funeral, and let's move on, to other ways of providing sufficient revenue to increase the road infrastructure. But for us, again, ETOL, it's privatizing what is a public good, which has been by the public for many years. It's a fundamental good. And I think also heartened by the ANC and KZN strong stance to fund or not to bring ETOL to deliver in other cities. I think we should also want to see more by government to support buses and taxis. In terms of water sanitation comment, Chair, I think we're worried the government is not paying sufficient attention to this. Well, we see many municipalities by time weeks without water, even in your provincial capital, Kimberley. We've seen times they go for days of some of that water. We saw crisis in Graham some few years ago. Infrastructure is not being sufficiently maintained. I'm not sure if you can look at municipalities or governments rather intervene nationally. And I think when we share again, we're worried about the massive increase in water tariffs being pushed this year. We do support the government's program to train 15,000 plumbers. That's fantastic work. We were asked by the President's comments last week, that we need to look at desalination as a long-term solution to the country. And I think, Comrade Chair, our concern on informal areas that in our glossy stats about 95%, 98% water access. Informal areas are really left out of the statistics. So, for example, remember the Cape Town, you go to the airport, there are two squatter camps there, Phil from and Malawi camp. They've been there for more than 20 years. They don't have main service. If they have, it's an ad hoc service. So your electricity, your water, your sanitation, the majority of informal service is not there. And because it's language not allocated for housing, most municipalities have counted into the basic service commitment. Which also is a worrying thing, because how does one go to or live in a shack for 20 years and convince them to vote? It's a very difficult thing to do, I'm sure. Chair, in terms of human settlements, again, fantastic with the government, but we're worried that your private sector is too often at corners for profit. We really need to have a statement coming in to deliver quality housing. And I think, Chair, we also need to look at we live in hope, honourable members. And I think if we look at the most RDP houses, the quality is shocking, even before people enter the house. There's a housing project in a place called Vista in Atlantis on the West Coast. They provide the model houses. Before you even move into the house, there's a crack between the door and the wall. There's a crack in the ceiling and the walls. Then one race happens and then there's chaos, you know. If you go to a place called West Bank, in Cape Town, the houses will go below the soil level. So when it rains, the house is flooded. If the occupants use more than one electrical appliance at a time, it collapses electricity. So they must watch the TV, they must heat the kettle. They can't do it two simultaneously. And look, that's across the country, Commissioner. I think the inclusion commissioner, I hope it didn't take too long. I think that's the fundamental issue remains the 33% unemployment, poverty and inequality. We are worried that this budget is not going to stimulate economic growth and job creation sufficiently, but we are appreciative of government's balancing act in terms of not going up the energy route. not overtaxing workers too much. We're hoping the judge Bennett's data tax reform proposal will help us to imprison you in a progressive way. Again, protesting, we're pleased that nuclear energy is not the route for us, because we're really killer budgets. We want to commit the government to do more of our waste expenditure, including municipalities. I think taking advantage of Solga here, we would love to plead to Solga to encourage our mayors not to put pictures of themselves in newspapers. We understand it's local elections, so they don't need to advertise in front of mayors come and go. I think, Comrade Chair, we'll see more effort by government on infrastructure investment, more to deal with the water crisis. And of course, we want to see more to end outsourcing returns for labor broking and to bring the SOEs under control. I think that is basically it, Comrade Chair. Thanks for giving us the time to raise our two sets of problems. Thank you, members.
Thank you, and thank you to Shaku for your presentation. You listed a lot of issues, and this actually spends the time us on what to zoom into in our oversight referring to communities from the N1, that is Adana, and elsewhere. I made the note. Our issue of infrastructure is the honorable member. Through the Police of Revenue Bill, the last few pages, the allocations for bulk water supply, which is talking about my own problem, for Namakwa, for the Pixie region, this year where the water is a scarce commodity. So, that's we have to zoom into when we do our oversight in our own province, in our own constituencies. Thank you, Kusato, FFC. I noted the acting chairperson, Mr. Kamalo, welcome. You've got your team here. All the members, you have the FFC presentation.
Up there, I will just proceed to slide number
which the Division of Revenue Bill was crafted, there are three lines that I have there. This is a slide that we presented way back, I think in 2009, thereabouts, 2010, when the global economic crisis first appeared. And our conclusion at that time was that based on our projections, but we can conclude on that slide that what has actually transpired is the severe scenario. Out of the three, the business as usual, the moderate scenario, and the severe scenario, which is basically referring to the impact of the global economic crisis. So it has been severe partly because of the slow rate of recovery of the global economy, and also because of other domestic challenges that began to appear when the economy failed to respond to some of the changes that were happening in the global environment, primarily relating to structural changes that are required in the South African economy that demonstrated a lack of robustness over the period. And therefore, the result is that we have a budget which was tabled in an environment of deteriorating economic aggregates, whether domestically and also globally. Very weak export performance in view of a deteriorating exchange rate basically indicates the lack of price elasticity or responsiveness of your export to price movements, and also reflects on the demand for your export as the relative price changes as a result of the exchange movement. Now, one would expect that when you have a deteriorating exchange rate, your exports would respond very quickly. On the import side, you also have a challenge in the sense that your current account keeps deteriorating even though the exchange rate is. So it basically shows that the economy is also very highly dependent on imported manufactured products compared to your exports, which are primarily commodity type of products. So you have a problem already in terms of the structure of the economy that needs to be dealt with. So we see a third trade year of downward revision of growth forecast, cumulatively over 2.5% between 2014 and 2017. Very fragile growth, which is below national development plan targets, and this constrains government's ability to address the key challenges of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. Now, the biggest problem in a situation like that is that you have to respond to what is happening to your deficit. But at the same time, you have these pressures on the demand side, which are driven by increasing levels of unemployment and poverty, which means the demand for services from government, direct services from government is also increasing. Now, you need to then balance that. So one of the key principles of the fiscal consolidation process in South Africa was that it should not be done against poor on the backs of the poor. And therefore, you need to protect your social spending. Now, in view of an economy that is not growing, revenue that is not buoyant, we can all celebrate that SARS collected above the target. But the point still remains that we are now close to where we are supposed to be in terms of the demand that the fiscal is faced with. So the challenge still remains the same that we had at the beginning when the minister tabled the medium term budget policy statement. It still remains even when last year's budget was tabled. So the challenge is still there, irrespective of what has happened to the revenue collection. Now, we also need to re-emphasize as a commission that government needs to continue with the exercise or to exercise fiscal restraint and improve the composition and quality of spending to minimize long-term fiscal risk. So here we're talking about generating value for money, improving the allocative efficiency of resources. And I think the Division of Revenue bill in its own way goes a long way towards trying to instill that kind
of the principle with a few of the changes that have been made. We have listed those main revisions to the bill, and I just want to focus, one that I would like to focus on in particular is the one that deals with the clarification of provision for withholding and stopping of funds. This is important in the context of what we experienced in the last year with respect to the withholding of equitable share transfers to municipalities and also to the water board, mostly it was on what is owed to ESCOM. Now, one of the matters that we put in that context was that we need to clarify, make it very clear that, okay, it's a constitutional issue. The Constitution does provide for such withholding in cases of consistent violation of certain principles around financial management norms and standards. And we also insisted that such an action must be a last resort measure. At the Commission, we welcome that this matter has been clarified in the Division of Revenue Bill, but we still want to reiterate that it is important in looking at these matters to think very clearly about what the principle around the equitable share is in the context of the Constitution 214, Section 214 in particular, which is 10 criteria that need to be met. Now, it is not a conditional grant, yes, but it does indicate what it is supposed to be for. Now, in the design of the local government equitable share formula, those issues have been taken, or those criteria have been taken into consideration. The need for municipalities to provide basic services is a direct component of the local government equitable share formula. Now, it is inconceivable, therefore, to envisage a situation where the basic services are not provided or are not paid for, when in fact the equitable share formula transfer has directly calculated what the amount is that is required for those basic services, and nobody has said this is too little. We have done some work in the past in the process of reviewing the local government equitable share formula, and we found that indeed on the operational side, the equitable share formula allocates sufficient amount of revenue. On the capital side, we might have an issue. But definitely for the payment of basic services, that should not be an issue. And that is why we have reiterated our recommendation that in cases where this type of failure is observed consistently, it should not be not envisaged that we can arrive at a situation where we must actually ring-fence those resources to ensure that the payments for those public services are met, because it is directly related to the purpose from a constitutional point of view of why we have an equitable share formula and why we have routinized it in such a way in the design to ensure that all those basic services that are listed in the relevant schedules of the Constitution that local government needs to provide are actually covered in the local government equitable share formula. So I just want to share to highlight that particular matter. And then I will want to, at this stage, to hand over to Halim Dawood to take you through the rest of the presentation.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. Now, just to go into a bit of the detail with respect to the numbers and the changes to the Division of Revenue Bill with respect to the National Fiscal Framework. What we do notice is that the government is spending projected spending of 4.7 trillion rand over the 2016 MTA period, and that is relative to the revenue collected of 4.3 trillion rand. So government is spending more than what it's collecting, so there is a much mentioned the emphasis of 33.2%. But if you look at the breakdown of that revenue by the three spheres of government, consistent with previous years, national and provincial is getting a lion's share of the allocation. However, when you look at the municipal allocations, it's growing faster than the allocations to the other spheres. Now, Chairperson, you would perhaps note that in our previous submission on the division of revenue, our submission on the division of revenue, we always emphasize the need that indirect grants should be a ratio of loss to resort. So the Commission welcomes the declining growth of indirect grants, although if you compete with the growth of direct grants, it's still going at a fast pace. Now, with respect to the allocation that the national government receives, a higher allocation has been allocated to the higher education, presumably to address the student debt and the trailing of the increases. Now, this currently review that is taking place and the Commission welcomes it. And from the Commission's perspective, the important thing is to look at the overall post-schooling system as a large university, especially in light of the national government taking over the TVET colleges. And here what is important to emphasize is not just enrollment but also attainment in terms of achieving qualifications, because this is critical for the labor market. Now, when we look at infrastructure spending, the bulk of the infrastructure spending is being done by your state-owned enterprises, largely in terms of economic infrastructure. Provinces and local government also implement larger social infrastructure with respect to clinics, roads, etc. Now, the Commission welcomes this infrastructure because this plays a major role in terms of boosting economic growth as well as stimulating job creation. However, we'd like to emphasize that there needs to be emphasis placed on delivering of these projects on time as well as the quality of infrastructure scheme which has been lacking in the past. Moving on to the provisional fiscal framework, it's been revised downwards by 90 budget rand compared to the 2015 in GDP, so there has been a significant reduction. However, when we look at these downward reductions and we compare the annual average real growth over the 2016 period, we still find both the PES as well as the conditional growing positively. But this needs to be balanced against the fact that in 2016-17 specifically, both the PES as well as the conditional provincial costs will be declining, with the conditional grants being hardest hit at minus 2.3% decline. However, our overall assessment of this is that provinces should still be able to deliver the constitutionally mandated services with the PES. However, without any service delivery implications, however, national priority expenditure that is funded through conditional grants may come under pressure in 2016-17. There's just been a few changes to the PES specifically. An amount of 2.3 billion has been added to the PES. Largely as a result of the division of property rate grants being placed into the PS in 2016-17. Also, in addition to that, the PS will be used to expand the human Loma virus grant so that the program can continue and expand as well. Now, the Commission supports both initiatives because they enhance efficiencies, but also at the same time they mainstream these activities into the work processes of the provinces. Now, we know that the provincial equitable share formula constitutes six components, and each component is assigned a weight. Now, for 2016-17, those weights have remained the same, but what we'd like to emphasize and we'd like to support is that those provinces that was impacted negatively as a result of reduced numbers due to Census 2011 are being supported to phase the implementation of provision. We support that as it prevents or reduces disruption to service delivery processes and services. Now, moving on to looking at some of the specific changes to the provincial conditional grant, and here just to note that there has been significant downward revision of the human settlements development grant to the amount of 1.6 billion rand over the MTPs, and also the human facilities revitalization grant has been reduced by 200 million rand. The Chilean Revolution supports the reprioritization of funds to the extent that counts are equally distributed and targeted at non-performing grants. So we support the principle of reprioritization by taking funds away from non-performing grants, but there are a couple of provisions that we'd like to emphasize to show you in the following slide. Now focusing specifically on the cuts to the housing, the HSD, DG grant, what we would like to emphasize is that this big cut will accelerate the decline in house developed by allocation. And they would like to emphasize that government should look at supporting housing programs, specifically your self-build as well as your finance linked individual subsidy program, in order to reduce pressure on the housing settlement development grant. Further housing investment in mining towns must be clearly considered and informed needs and preferences. Now moving on to the health costs specifically, what we see is that generally across all of the health costs is good spending performance. Most of the grants are spending close to 100%, with the exception of your health facility revitalization grant as well as your NHI grant. Now, with respect to reductions, we see that HIV and AIDS and the human facility revitalization grant, as indicated previously, has been revised downwards. And they would like to emphasize that these reductions need to be carefully managed so that we minimize or reduce the impact on service delivery. And the Commission has previously noted and here would like to emphasize that budget cuts to conditional grants must be implemented expenditure so that we are aware of the impact of the objectives of those grants are going to be. Moving on to the basic education grants, when you look at the table below, we see that most of the grants are not performing quite well. There are only a few grants that are spending close to 100%. And so one has to look at how these underspending grants can be utilized to leave budget pressures in other areas. We'd also like to point out that there is a reduction in the education infrastructure grant by 160 million rand. And then also the merger of school infrastructure platform with the education infrastructure grant. Now, in our submission last year, the Commission made the recommendation that there should be an introduction of the ECD grant to fund ECD infrastructure, specifically to address backlogs in ECD. And here, the Commission welcomes the fact that this recommendation has been implemented with the introduction of the ECD grant in this financial year. Moving on to NHI reforms, the committee is well aware of the NHI reforms that are taking place. And what is happening in 2016-17 is the NHI grant is being merged with a new national health grant, which is an indirect grant and is intended to fund ideal clinic initiatives, among other things. Now, the Commission would like to point out that it is concerned with the endless changes that is being made to this grant, especially when the sector as it introduces uncertainty, duplication, and also erodes all priorities. And then moving on to looking at the conditions attached to the provincial conditional grants, here we'd like to emphasize that, well, firstly, a larger share of the infrastructure conditional grants are being allocated to maintenance. And here the Commission would like to support this because we have previously and consistently maintained that the not sufficient allocations are being directed at maintenance backlogs. And here the allocations largely within the health and education sector. However, we'd like to point out that the principle of rewarding provincial departments through the indirect, through the incentive component of meeting maintenance targets is supported, although under competitive provinces should not add students out for not being able to meet targets due to lack of capacity. Thank you. I'll hand over to my colleague because we will take us through the local government's complaint.
Thank you. The local government fiscal framework. We know that the local government, like any other sphere, will be affected by the slowdown in economic activity, the recession which is affecting the mining and agriculture system, and the drought, as well as coming local government, this will have an impact on the sphere. Then the sector will also experience one of the most wide-ranging border-related tensions that the country has ever witnessed, time price, we collect the inflation price, we affect the finance sector. But every market that the sector continues to receive increasing amount of national price revenue. For example, in the NPF, the sector is going to receive 334 billion, and that graph here shows the value of transfers over time, which have been increasing. And moving to the next slide, we look at the adjustment, the plan adjustment to as a result from the budget. We note that over the 2016 MTF, the total baseline allocation to the sector are set to decrease by 2.3 billion. And for this particular amount, we split into 5.5 billion, which will be in the form of direct conditional transfer to municipalities. And 500 million will be transferred as indirect conditional grant, while 300 million will be for the local government to share. So the commission notes all the adjustments and it understands the need for reprioritization of budgets towards more urgent priority areas. Then, as I mentioned before, one of the things which will affect the local government is the demarcation process. The number of municipalities will be reduced from 278 to 257 by 21 as were noted by concerned before. Each major amalgamation will be provided with a transitional grant. And we had some recommendations before that particular grant which was implemented. The Commission encouraged treasuries, both national and provincial, and COMTA to put in place some mechanisms for monitoring this grant so that this grant is used specifically for the offset of costs related to the transitional process, which are related to demarcation. And also, the Commission underscored the point that there must be a full financial impact of all these demarcations. That the financial impact assessment must be established prior to these demarcations taking place. And the municipalities which are affected must be aware of the full financial implications of these changes, so that they are not affected negatively. All stakeholders in the demarcation process should consider a post-demarcation review process where we assess all demarcations which have taken place before to understand the impact of these demarcations and the financial implications of these demarcations on municipalities. Then moving to the local government equitable share and conditional grant, the changes which have happened there. As I noted that the areas have been adjusted, but more important, these adjustments are on the institutional and community services components. The basic service components remain untouched or preserved, which then modern the society will not really have an impact on basic service delivery. So the Commission supports the option of reducing this component by not more than 10%. Because we know in the previous year, this component increased by about 28%. So the reduction in these two components will not be more than 10%, which is welcome. And the Commission is also of the view that reduction on these components and the preservation of the best service component is not likely to affect service delivery directly, but may actually compromise administrative efficiency, which may have a bearing on the delivery of services. Then, going to baseline reductions of transfers, that graph will demonstrate the reduction on different transfer instruments. We see the big there, a reduction of 1.53 billion over the NGM, one of the highest. And we move to the next slide, where we summarize that. The Commission is aware that half of baseline allocations were unavoidable consequences of poor economic growth and reprioritization of allocations to more urgent planning priorities. That is understandable. And also the reduction due to reprioritization should, as a principle, take into account all the historical performance of municipalities of individual grants. They must be looked at individually. And we know that this has been the case. they need also to minimize the unintended consequences of these cuts, especially considering that some of these cuts fall disproportionately on poor households due to these households heavy reliance on grants. And also the government should ensure that cuts do not compromise delivery of food basic services and also the overall government infrastructure program. And also the commission implores local governments to manage resources efficiently. And to end, the last two slides, I look at what has been happening on the review of local government infrastructure grants. We know that local government infrastructure grants has been a review which is a follow-up to the local government execution review process. On the review of the local government infrastructure plan, which is undergoing, meant to improve the efficacy and effectiveness of the entire grant system, the Commission welcomes this particular review, and it is encouraged that some of the recommendations on this review process were implemented in the budget for this year. For example, the sanitation and water grant has been met, and the Commission has previously recommended that there must be some consolidation of grants which are necessary in the same effort, that is the case. And also the MIG now has been amended to allow maintenance and refurbishment costs, which is a welcome move. And the public transport network grant is now allocated through a formula which ensures predictability and certainty, which is a welcome development. And to end, we note that on the local government exit share formula, FSC and SATA are busy developing a model which will cost the basic services. And this particular model itself, and FSC will be launching this particular model in due course, which the model seeks to come up with cost of basic services and the current system where we think there are some weaknesses in the costing of basic services. This particular model is going to inform the local government and other grants in general. So everything that model is not right now current. Thank you. I'm a
Joseph. Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson. My aim is just to conclude in response to a number of recommendations that the committee's focus made in the past financial year. Just to align with what the work that the committee itself has done, you will note that we have already presented to you our table submission in May 2015. The submission comprised several chapters with 27 key recommendations to which government has made a response to in the budget review there next year and within the budget. Most of these recommendations government has agreed to. And in particular, we highlight two particular aspects. The first one was that in the budget speech, the Minister of Finance himself alluded to the need to continue on the path of strategic investments to enhance economic growth and sustain development, which is quite key despite the ongoing process of fiscal consolidation. In that respect, it was noted that it was not only the expansion of infrastructure or building new infrastructure that matters, especially at provincial and local government level, but the maintenance itself of existing infrastructure. I mean, the Commission has alluded to previously, the local government sphere on its own is sitting on about a trillion rand of assets in infrastructure, many of which are declining because of a lack of critical maintenance, the lack of asset registers for planning, and so on and so forth. The FFC has made a recommendation that this existing infrastructure forms the backbone through which we can continue to sustain and development in key areas, especially in urban and peri-urban areas, and also within rural areas itself. And we made recommendations of the need to enhance how you manage those assets, asset registers, supplementing them through capital spending and so on. And we're glad that the minister in the 2016 budget actually noted the proposal to incentivize the maintenance budget across the three spheres of government. We also note that we had made a recommendation around the early childhood development, which we see as key as a foundational phase for children entering into the educational system at very early ages that can improve their cognitive skills and the ability to learn and ensure that they sustain their education throughout the formative years in primary and secondary schools. And each grant to that extent has been introduced within the last body to ensure that you fund the infrastructure maintenance of normal subsidized children. In that particular respect, we noted the disparate arrangement around ECD funding within municipalities and within provinces. And we're quite glad that now we have an ECD grant that will perhaps coordinate the funding of such processes. In terms of recommendations made by this committee itself, we will not delve into that, but we note that a comprehensive list has been provided by the committee itself to government, which have been responded to within the budget review. Just to say that SSC fully supports those recommendations, and we agree and they align with a number of the responses that we have articulated within our annual submission document itself. We, however, note that in some instances, more work needs to be done, and probably we'll get a guideline or directive from the committee itself to assist us in that regard. In particular, we note that the committee has emphasized quite keenly the matter of the shortfalling budgets. And from the commission's perspective, one key area that can be addressed is through staff verification that government itself will carry out and the vetting process and framework developed by government itself. In conclusion, I think to summarize what Commissioner Kumalo has said is that the 2016 budget has been crafted under one of the most difficult economic circumstances South Africa has faced. Declining economic growth, the threat of an economic downgrade, widening budget deficits that can impact on the ability of government to address substantial demands on it for the public sector goods and economic goods and services required by a significant amount of the population who are heavily reliant on government for these aspects and also government's programs of transforming the economy and reducing inequality are coalescing to those issues within the economic circumstances of South Africa faced at this time. The Commission commends government efforts to reduce the budget deficit through the fiscal consolidation process, which is widely encouraged, as we have done in our recommendations and our scenario planning. We have made a number of pointers on consolidation is going and how the process is unfolding. We are aware that costs and allocation are inevitable. They have to occur in the consolidation period, as my colleague Halif has pointed out. We are in principle in agreement that funds must always be reprioritized away from unproductive programs towards those that can actually deliver on their expected mandates and expected outcomes in addressing the range of socioeconomic problems that the government seeks to address. So we welcome that. We are in agreement to the 2016 budget announced by the Minister of Finance, and it dovetails nicely with a number of recommendations we have made within our submission, especially around the issue of capital investment and the need to sustain that in the phase of fiscal consolidation, the ongoing fiscal consolidation, because we are well aware that the foundation for South Africa's economic growth, as envisaged in the NDP, is that we need to reduce or we need to ameliorate the constraints that exist within the system, structural constraints in terms of infrastructure, structural constraints that hamper the expansion of your labor market and skills retention and so forth are quite critical in that respect. So we welcome the budget and welcome the fact that it agrees with many of the recommendations contained within our submission. We know that the efforts to protect infrastructure allocation and improve the system of conditional transfer are quite commendable. I think as Okululi has said, as Halif has said, as Commissioner Kumalo have highlighted, the key aspect is that the infrastructure allocations must not decline. The quality thereof of the spending of infrastructure investment is quite critical and needs to be enhanced in order to ensure that the long-term sustainability of our economic growth achieves potential. We also finally, we also note the quality issue for investors to yield the desired outcome. It must be matched by efficient and effective spending of resources towards what is catered to do. And therefore, the building of the capabilities around the spending of such grants is quite vital. As Halim has noted, a significant shock of economic spending is carried out by state-owned enterprises. And the ability to be efficient in the use of resources is quite vital for that. Thank you very much.
Are you done? Thank you. Thank you to the AFC. On the mirrors, I might have a few notes here. AFC emphasizes clause 19. I read clause 19 now. It's important that when we engage with the provinces, but when we engage in our constituencies, with our municipality leadership, that we read to them clause 19. Because every municipal manager, every mayor, I want to say every councillor must be in the possession of the Division of Revenue. This is a very, very important document in South Africa, specifically when you in a sphere of government. The other matter raised is about the ECD grant. Now, I would bring members back to the presentation we got of the Division of Revenue. Oh. Slide 44. Regarding the ECD grant as recommended by the FFC, the reply was, government is exploring options on how to fund ECD infrastructure. However, the functional issues around the responsibility for ECD infrastructure between NGOs, municipalities and provinces remain very complex. Correct. But we have to address it to come up with a solution. So that is where this committee also can engage with other role players regarding this specific grant. Why? Because it forms part of the foundation phase program in that learner's life, which is very crucial for him or her to succeed later. Thank you, honourable members. We received a on-page submission from the Professor Lorica Malu. Do you have it? One patient, addressing two matters, health and welfare services, and transport and logistics infrastructure, and so she goes on. Thank you to the 4-hour search unit for Mrs. Yolande Brown that responded to the submission. Have this been distributed?
No.
It was meant for me, but I think you might distribute this. What is email? Fine, but it will be, it forms part of the hearing, and it will be forming part of the committee's report. Treasury, I want to engage with you there. Are you ready to give a reply here? Because we will engage with the negotiating mandate on the 20th of April. That's when we are in the Eden District in George next week. And again, when we deal with the final mandate. So, you've got the option now, the 20th or later. But I think it's important that the National Treasury also make an input on the submissions that we receive. Questions? Are there any questions? On the instructions, no questions. Fantastic. No questions.
Thank you very much. What I'll try to do is focus on the key issues raised during the presentations made today and not highlight the issues where there's general agreement, but potentially highlight the issues where we would like to refer the committee to further reading or issues to take into account. So I would like to start with the first presentation that was made by Tolga, and a number of issues was raised there, but just maybe to highlight to the committee, one of the concerns raised by Tolga was that when the Division of Revenue Bill was tabled, the top-line increase for 2016-17 was not known at this stage, but about 2 days after the visual festival was tabled, Deta announced the bulk increase, which is important for committee members also to note, and I know it's slightly confusing, but there's a different bulk increase for general and for municipalities, given that the difference of the financial years, the clauses that you can is very different. But just inform the committee that the municipal bulk increase for 2016-17 is 7.9%. And what is currently cases for the local government equitable share for 2016-17 is for increase of 8%. So we're actually overfunding municipalities by 0.1%. It's just important to note that there's adequate funding for the increase. Then reference was also made to MSCOA and that there's no more provision made for municipal systems improvement grant, and that is factually correct. But maybe just to highlight that there's another grant, what we call the Municipal Finance Financial Management Grant, and that provides for that. If I can just point the committee members to page 195, which contains the conditional grant framework for the financial management grant, the first bullet. It indicates the conditions, and it's got a lot of things in there, but it ends the paragraph including the municipal standard charter account. So municipalities still are getting funding for implementing the MSCOA. So I think that's an important issue. And then SAGA also raised a number of issues that's quite important, and SAGA also highlighted that it's ongoing work that's being done. But a lot of that work is not necessary directly related to the Division of Revenue Bill. It relates to other pieces of local government legislation, such as the Municipal Finance Management Act, the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, and also the Municipal Systems Act. So I think what is more important here is to highlight points that SAGA is in collaboration with the FTC, with National Treasury, and also DECOC. And as progress is made, it will also be included and progress will be given to the committee. Then with regard to the recommendation by Honourable De Beer that the withholding issue and an ESCOM should be called to the committee, it's a very good proposal and it could add quite a bit of value. But what could also most likely be useful is to make it a joint committee also with a standing committee on appropriation, because they've also raised it as an issue of this proposal from our side. Then with regard to the Kusaka presentation, again, quite a number of very useful things. And possibly quite important is the issue about the personnel that's raised, and it's particularly related also to the provinces, given that quite a number of government employees are appointed by provinces. And it's definitely something that we are looking at, and we're working with the provinces concerned. And budget review also comes from it. And I think a key point to be made in this regard is that the rebalancing of government should focus not on essential and core staff, but non-core staff. And we've done quite a bit of analysis also of what has been happening, and surprisingly, is that although we've seen a reduction in the number of self-employed in provinces, some of those reductions are not really wanted. They reductions are not really what we want, because the cost of when reductions are made, and that we have seen some trends where, for example, administrative staff who get appointed, but teachers and nurses and doctors are really seeing some of the reductions. But we are working with provinces, and it is very key that when these plans are put in place, it is done in such a way that service delivery objectives, because when the rebalancing was done, it was not done on all staff. Those funds were protected. It was just a reduction made on the non-all staff.
which is quite a team approach. And it could also be quite useful that as progress is made, we also get feedback to the committee's concern that essentially, you know, you have also a bit of progress report in the medium-term budget policy statement end of the year. Then with regard to the consultative presentation as well, and it's also for the committee to consider on how to take it forward. But quite a number of the recommendations and issues discussed link back much more to the fiscal framework, and quite a number of the issues also relate back to the appropriation law, which is also being discussed. So quite a lot of those slides actually deal with national departments, and the practice they deal with that is when the appropriation law gets discussed. Then with regard to the FFC, there is 2 points I think that's quite important. And the 1 point that was made is that a concern was expressed that national priority expenditure areas funded through conditional grants may be under pressure in 2016-17. I would like to refer the committee to two documents. And the first is page 74 of the Division of Revenue book, and it's got a table W1.6, and it indicates where the reductions were made. And there's actually one big reduction in 2016-17, and it's on one grant, the Human Settlement Development Grant, and then that needs to be read in conjunction with page 70 of the budget review. And I would just like to quote the page as well. I'll just give an extract of what it says. It deals specifically with regard to the Human Settlement Grant. And it's under the Human Settlement and Municipal Infrastructure Functional Group, under the third paragraph, it indicates that the Department of Human Settlement is reviewing the laws and policies that govern its activities with the aim of proposing revisions to improve service delivery. And in the interim, both the Human Settlement Development Grants provinces and the Urban Settlement Development Grants municipalities have been reprioritized. Despite the decreased funding allocated to these grants over the period, they expected to provide, and then it provides the number of the services that were provided through that grant. So it's page 17 of the budget. And maybe to highlight that both those grants grow quite difficult to pay. And so, and it is also important for us to rebalance its policies in that regard. And then the other one that was also mentioned is that the incentive grant should not penalize undercapacitated provinces. And there's been quite a few presentations also made on the incentive grant. And it's really to provide incentives after more than 10 years of capacity support to provinces to build the infrastructure capabilities. That, so it wasn't introduced that provinces, you know, were not given opportunities to build the capacity. But the provinces that did not receive an incentive grant last year, specific efforts will be in place also to build the capacity as well. So I think that is quite an important issue. And then although a presentation was not made, we did receive the presentation or a submission also by Ms. Rekha, and we've also prepared a bit of input, so I don't know if that could also add a bit of value. So the first issue had to do with the developed to Pretoria and Mapuani to Pretoria lines. It's got to do with the railway. And process is currently embarking on quite a big investment program to deal with the neglected capital infrastructure assets in order to deal with their own stock.
Obama has classified and prioritized court corridors according to passenger demand and spinning his prioritized according to the assets. And that includes also the Metro Rail services. And then Mabopani, to Victoria Line falls under Forest A, so it really means it's quite one of the busiest routes. And it transports about 100,000 passengers per weekday, which is quite a lot. And then the Wits and Pretoria Line is a corridor C with lower traffic, and transports about 20,000 passengers per weekday. And then both those have been identified for investment, so it's definitely an important point. But then also just one thing that was pointed out is that both the Wits as well as Mabopani Pretoria Line are prone to cable theft. And that is why some of the improvements are also focused on security investment, which is quite important as well. Then with regard to the issue about non-communicable diseases, again, the committee could also refer to the Department of Health annual report for 2014-15. And in that, they point out that the reduction of risk factors for and improving the management of non-communicable diseases is a key priority for the Department of Health. And a directive was issued to all people receiving and screening as part of the HIV and AIDS counseling also be tested and screened for hypertension and blood glucose, which is also quite important. And then another area that's also important is that, and if you look at the Department of Health website, they've got an integrated chronic disease manual, which is very, very long. But again, I would like to highlight a few things in that policy. The integrated chronic disease model has got interventions that start with primary prevention through health promotion, early detection, and secondary prevention through treatment and care, and then the third one is tertiary prevention through rehabilitation. So, and to look at the non-communicable diseases identified, it includes hypertension, diabetes, asthma, and epilepsy, and mental illness as well. So it is a key strategy of the National Department of Health together with the implementation side, the Provincial Department of Health as well. And it is funded through the Provincial Equitable Chief. So it is definitely a key point that it needs to be prioritized. It is part of the strategy being rolled out by the provincial and national departments. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Wendy. I'm requesting you if you could put that reply of you in writing, that it can become part of the committee's decision report. That will be setting the staff drafting report. Well, members, that brings us to the end of submissions to the deliberations as well as the reply by the National Treasury. I want to thank, we still have minutes to consider, and after that I will adjourn the meeting, but I request the honourable members please to stay in their seats that we do a finance meeting quickly to adopt the report on the Eden District, the matters we discussed last year, engaging the Provincial Treasury of the Western Cape, because this report will be becoming part of the package for us in Sweden when we go back to the industry. Thank you for the submissions from Kusatu, from the FFC, from Saga, from our good lady Malu. Impossible if we can get hold of her address that we can confirm that we dealt with the submission. And she's welcome to visit Parliament. Parliament is there for people. On the members, we're going to into housekeeping issues now in a minute, so thank you for your patience. I think there's coffee and tea outside. We will release you. You are busy people. And take care of the rest of the day. Thank you. On the members, do you... thank you. Thank you, one of the members. I put the minutes to the committee. It's got the motion by Honorable Mutara, seconded by Honorable Mutara. Thank you. Over members, the minutes of the 17th of February. Briefing by PBO on its pre-budget report and briefing by World Bank on its South African economic updates. It was a very good informative meeting. Page 1. Page 2, with all the people present. PBO, World Bank. Page 3. Put the minutes to the committee. Proposed by Honorable Essa, seconded by Honorable Mutara. The members, the minister of the 26th of February, meeting by the National Treasury on the Division of Revenue Bill. This was a joint meeting with the Standing Committee on Appropriations in this same venue. Page 1. There is a long list of people present. Page 2 is the names, page 3, staff, introduction, deliberations. Now I know what happened, I can grow this one very well. Page 4, honorable members, I put a minute to the committee. Honorable Mazara seconds. And Honorable Samani, Honorable Tara proposes, and Honorable Samani seconds. That takes us to the minutes of the members of the
by the FFC and PBO on the 2015 budget. We had a pre-meeting on the budget. It was a post-meeting on the budget. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. And page 4. Honorable Ishak proposes adoption. Can we get the seconder? Honorable Dunbar seconds. Thank you. And it comes to the last little minutes of the members. Presentation by the National Treasury on the third quarter conditional grant expenditure, dated 5th of April 2016, that was the date of the meeting. Page 1, all the names. Page 2, presentation by the National Treasury, May, Martin, Zucker. And page 3. I put the minutes to the committee. Honorable Zamani proposed adoption, second by Honorable Mutar. Thank you, Honorable members. That deals with the minutes. On the program, Honorable Mutar, are there any announcements or developments? We are going to the Eden District next week. After that, it's consensus period. So, I think you might just update us. Maybe on both comments.
Thank you, listen. I think there's no changes. I did have a discussion with Luvalano yesterday. But subsequent to our discussion, things are going to be the same. So Wednesday next week, we'll consider negotiating minutes. And I think all provinces have concluded. Except Northwest, which is doing day to day. So we'll have received all the negotiating mandates signed by next week, Wednesday. The rest of the program stays the same. I think from our side, just the division of revenue will be tabled in the House on. Okay, let me not lie to you. Wait for tomorrow's program committee meeting. Yes, there's a deadline, but it's subject to committee scheduling their budget briefings in committee. So if I don't want to commit to the committee, but everything else is the same for now. If there's no budget changes, the constituency we say is the same. I think we have a meeting scheduled for finance, which was scheduled for finance for tomorrow, which is going to shift because of the annual report not having been signed by the minister. So it can't come to the committee, but I think committee members are aware of that. That's only that change. So that's all the technicality as to when we search with finance. We will start, I think when we get back from the side of appropriations, we're going to start with briefings from provincial treasury and the Western Cape, especially in preparation for our oversight, in line with the program that we've adopted for the annual program of the committee jointly. So that's the little one track question.
Thank you. Coming back to finance, we will be dealing with the 9 provincial treasuries and then followed up by the legislation. Mr. Intuition advised me the legislation is on its way, but it's still being dealt with in the National Assembly. Looking for that referral. So mine will be a back program until we adjourn, I believe, on the 5th of May. On for Esra.
Thank you for the feedback. Just a matter of concern. If we're going to be dealing with the 9 provinces during the month of May, and I was looking at the program and the diary, and I don't know, I'm just a little concerned. I don't know how we're going to fit this in. It's a matter of serious concern. coming up. And then I've been told in that for the rest of this week I was running right up. So what I've been told. Yes, right. Oh, we could have used this week, you know, to catch up with some of the backlog. With due respect, but so much of time is being wasted, and then, you know, over a 2 week period, which you really can't do. Thank you, Chairperson.
I consulted with Secretary Mr. Rinder, and we are dealing with two provinces per meeting to do a thorough interrogation of and with the province. Referring to what we had today, referring to the Division of Revenue Bill, it's a package coming here where this province come and explain to us what is happening in the Northern Bend in terms of their fiscal position. But it's got a lot of substances. We have to do it quarterly. We can't. In our strategy meeting, we said we're going to do two sessions through the year with the nine provinces. The other quarters, we would, the researchers that would come in and the PPO is doing an analysis of their report and advices. If there's space, we can build it. But we would have to find the space after we come back after the 3rd of August 2016. So it's been dealt with, and our work in the committee program, program committee, got to work there. And we are coming, so I'm satisfied. So, I believe the program has been circulated to the Honourable Members, so please dialogue that. Honourable Madam.
Thank you. Chair, let me just in case that the committee, it's really out of our hands, the committee, the meeting being postponed tomorrow. So, the schedule is the land bank. That's really the only one that we have to come back to. But otherwise, we found ways of not cramming the work. That's the first. But remember, in principle, we had said Wednesday and Friday. Now, this Friday is a joint committee. Constitutional Review Committee is on this Friday. So we can't have a committee. We can't have a committee meeting. That's it. In relation to, so on that day, we would have had our meeting tomorrow. But it's something that's not procedurally in. We are going to manage the process going forward, exactly what the chairman is saying, with the scheduling of the provinces coming and our interactions there. Humanly, it's impossible for us to do it quickly. That's why we done it. It's unfortunate. It means that twice a year you will have to include a lot of information. So that's also now why we spread it out. Instead of three on a day, I think that's what we did last year. It's now two. In the committee. So, it is, and of course, I mean, we can schedule meetings on a Friday, but you know yourself.
If you look at the NDC of this morning, you'll see Friday has been captured, it's been used for joint meetings. I've looked at it. And this is going to be the pattern. So, we can't take Fridays because some of our members are serving in those committees. Like you on board Motala. Yeah. Alright, that covers that. We also took a decision that we will engage and take up the resolutions in our meetings for this term, like engaging with Land Bank. It was a decision of the Finance Committee. But the circumstance is such in common because the document hasn't been signed off by the Minister. So I just want to keep that clear. All the members, that brings us to the finance meeting, please. I open this meeting of the Select Committee for Finance, Nico Wright. The apologies is the Honourable Mohai and the Honourable Mohai Shimping Solani. You can operate from there, you're operational, as always. Thank you for that. Thank you for circulating the report. Thank you to Esther and Solani for drafting this document. And Gertau assisting. Honourable members, this report is a result of our meeting we had on the 4th of November. The 4th of November, in response of the letter received from the chairperson of the NCLP, we engaged with the provincial treasury of the Western Cape. We invited the provincial minister, they call themselves provincial minister in this province, in the Cape. The leadership, HOD, etc., attended our meeting and made presentations referring to money that has been allocated as announced at the taking power to the people in April. And the committee wanted to know what happened. And what's in front of you is the result of what happened on paper. We have engaged next week not only us as Finance Cross and the Committee of Finance, but all the other relevant committees with this information going to see what happened at grassroots level. We were also requested to go there as the Committee for Finance. We couldn't do that because of the processing of the NTBDS, the end of last year, November, October, November, and the beginning of this year engaging with the National Budget Program. That was a constraint we had. And it's captured in the last page in terms of our recommendations. So that in brief is the report that's in front of us. I put this report to the committees and they come to finance. It was circulated last week. Yeah. You want to read through it again? The fact of the matter is we will have to engage next week what happened actually at these different towns where these programs were rolled out. I think it's 7 towns in the Indian district. I haven't seen that program. I think there will be, I believe there will be a briefing on Bumadara, I don't know when.
From what I understand here is that the program, the steering committee has concluded, the program is going to be sent directly to individual members. Yeah, they were just, I hope by the end of tomorrow, because it's going to go to the program committee. Every member of the SOB. Yeah, it's the way they, I think there were just a few details that they were working out on delegations and where and who and what, and the report. So, but what they agreed was that every member will get them. If not through directly, through your party caucus, you will get them. All the logistics, we'll receive all the logistics, and then I think your travel arrangements or whatever were made previously.
Yes.
Yes, that is concluded, but based on how we are working as teams, yes, committees plus a delegation, a delegation, you will stay and there you are transported. But there is a brief for each delegation, what the delegation will deal with, and the approach of what it is, because it's a report like this. So not taking any new information, but it's for the first time I think that they're testing the physical report like this, because usually it goes through a report. Yeah, so, but we, all members will get this individually directly. If you don't, members, please, later, probably by Thursday, if you could check with your party leaders, that you have. Party versus or party or provincial work. Thanks.
There you got it short and sweet. I've also been informed by Mr. Ento. There will be an arrival test at the George Airport, so we will be welcome there and maybe get more information. So between today and Monday, that's traveling day, we received our bookings already by SMS. For Monday from wherever you are departing and going to George. So that's the logistical side. All members, I put this report to the committee. Can I get a proposal? Honorable Jamali proposes. Seconded by Honorable Motar. Thank you, all members. This will then become part of the package for our work next week. We dealt with the program. That brings us to the end of the Select Committee of Finance. There was a matter that came about in the plenary, I think I must deal with this. Referring to the report on the fiscal framework and revenue proposals, that was a joint meeting with the Standing Committee on Finance, and the Finance Committee in the Energy Report was ACC, and the other report, which was word for word, comma for comma, precisely the same report, but there was an administrative hiccup, but it was not ACC. I called in Mr. Andrew, asked what happened, and I also spoke to Advocate Tao. Advocate Tao is acting manager. What is very important, and that includes myself as the chairperson of this committee, is roles and responsibilities. That we double check ourselves. I've got this black book. It's now on my desk, it's a black book. And I make my list for the day. Afternoon, I sit and I take off. What did I do? What did I not do? Before I go home. So, in terms of our management, it helps with this. Of course, I was engaged with by the chairperson of council to refer this matter to Advocate Pandela. And that reply must go back to the chairperson of the council, National Council of Provinces, on the mobilization. As far as my concern, we dealt with this with the person of the staff, that it won't happen again, and we turned double-checking ourselves. So, as far as I'm concerned, I'm satisfied. But there's another route that's taken, that's happened straight aside, and I'm not interested in it. My role is not there, my role is here. So I want to thank the staff for arranging this meeting, and I want to thank the staff for their commitment. This is one of the committees that's the busiest committee in Parliament, but specific also in the National Council of Provinces.